I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to another episode of Serious Issues, a weekly comic book podcast hosted by your good friends, Siobhan Coombs.
Hello.
And me, Andrew Levins. Every week we record from King's Comics in Sydney, out the back in the office. But you know what? You can visit the main part of the store where they sell all the comics that we're about to talk about.
Please don't come into the office.
Why not?
Because Jim's never wearing any pants.
All right. Good warning. Heed our warning, folks. Never come out the back. What we do every single week on Serious Issues is read all of last week's books, let you know which were the good ones, which were the bad ones, which were the okay ones. Sorry, the fine ones.
Yeah. The official ranking system.
That's right. What is it? Good, good, fine, bad.
Yeah.
Or just, I mean, if you had your way, it'd just be fine, fine, fine. And it's just the different inflections
yeah.
of how you say fine.
There's
and people listen, like get read into it.
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad we agree.
We kick off every episode by reviewing all of last week's new number ones in a little segment that we call First Things First. And as usual, which publisher put out the most number ones? Marvel. Actually, I think it was Dynamite, but whatever. Just because yeah. I've got these
are the same Marvel.
It's same Marvel. So we've got all these. None of these were that great, to be honest. but we're going to talk about them first anyway.
Yep.
And there are some books that we did really love coming up in this stack. There was a massive stack of ones this week.
Yeah.
But I just thought, given that it's out in cinemas at the moment, and I'm pretty much certain that only one of us has seen it.
Absolutely. I finally seen Wonder Woman.
Yes. Oh, what did you think?
Yeah, I thought it was pretty good.
Yeah, great.
Yeah, it was nice.
Awesome. It was fine?
Yeah, it was fine. I pretty much just wanted a whole movie of the Amazons. And Steve Trevor was.
See, I didn't like the Amazon stuff.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I thought it was like watching a telly movie.
I liked that.
And like, it felt like all the other Amazons that weren't Wonder Woman were just doing a bad Gal Gadot impression with their accents.
Yeah, look, Robin Penn Wright. Is she just Robin Wright again? Anyway, whatever. Her accent wasn't amazing, but she looked so tough and cool. I think that was mostly what I was into.
Robin Wright's accent rubbed me the wrong way.
Good.
Yeah, we just lost all our listeners. Anyway, Spider-Man Homecoming is out in cinemas right now, and I really, really loved it. I think it's immediate for me. Top three Marvel movies
I've
seen. But you know me, I like to say extreme things immediately.
Best
Spider-Man
movie?
I mean, that's easy. Here's that saying. I mean, I'm like
Spider-Man
everyone.
Spider-Man 2 is great.
I love Spider-Man 2. I think this is just because it nails everything I like about the character of Spider-Man in a way that a movie has never done before, whereas Spider-Man 2 is just a good movie with a pretty shitty version of Spider-Man in it.
Yeah.
Tobes is, you know, he's done better things than Spidey.
Has he?
I don't know. As I said that, I was like, what else is he? Yeah, he's done Seabiscuit. Massive fan of the of Seabiscuit. We're big Seabiscuit heads over here. Spider-Man Homecoming. I think you would enjoy it, actually.
Yeah, I do want to see it.
Because it leans much more on like the teen movie tropes. Yeah. Michael Keaton's fantastic.
I love Michael Keaton.
We got a comic, a number one that's by Marvel occasionally get the synergy right and release a number one that kind of is more in line to the cinema versions of their heroes. And so this week we got Spider-Man Master Plan number one, which is like a one-shot written by Robbie Thompson with art by Nathan Stockman. And this is like basically like a new story featuring young high school student Peter Parker and taking on the crime master. If you have missed this iteration of Spider-Man especially that was the biggest thing, seeing the movie and seeing how incredible this iteration of Spider-Man is on the screen, it just made me realize like they need to work out a way to make this happen again in the comics.
Yeah.
Because, like, you know, I get that, like, you know, heroes need to grow with readers too, but also, like, you know, DC Rebirth, you know, showed us that sometimes it's good to go back to the classic versions of these beloved characters, and I think no character needs that more than Spider-Man. And they even had, like, a clean opportunity to do that, just make Miles Morales Spider-Man and make Peter Parker, like, a, you know, mentor role or something like that. But they've made it, bringing him over has made it even more convoluted. So
absolutely
whatever.
Agreed.
We get this weird one-shot Spider-Man master plan that is cute and sweet and completely pointless.
Totally. I liked it. It was like a classic, like, oh, Peter's always late for stuff. Oh, being Spider-Man is hard. That was cute. And there was a really nice little backup, which they just reprinted, a really, really classic Stanley
and Steve Ditko. Yep.
Story about the Vulture, which Duel, was really good fun to read.
Duel to the Death with the Vulture from 1963.
Yep. Really great.
And the second issue of Amazing Spider-Man. Pretty crazy.
Yeah, I love like really dickish Peter, who's like, yeah, I'm just going to make a bunch of money. Fuck you.
So if you've got $10 and you want to spend it on a teenage version of Spider-Man, go see the movie. And if you still have some change left over, maybe to a cheapo session, buy this comic, Spider-Man Master Plan, because it's good.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's cute. We also got from Marvel the most recent Deadpool Kills Everybody book. This time he is killing the Marvel Universe again in Deadpool Kills the Marvel Universe Again.
I don't want to read this anymore. Can I not read this anymore?
Siobhan hates a Deadpool book again, number one. This is written by Cullen Bunn and pencils by Dalibor Telagic with inks by Goran Sadzuka, who's been doing great work over at Daredevil recently.
I like the art.
The art's great. And, like, you know, we're reviewing another Cullen Bunn book later on, but, like, you know, this is absolutely what you would expect from this kind of book.
Yeah.
You're either on board with it just from the title alone and you won't be disappointed, or you are like, I don't really need to see Deadpool, like, making jokes and killing everybody, no matter what his motivations are. I like that Mojo, is it Mojo's behind it? Or no, it's, what's his name? What's his name?
It's Red Skull.
Red Skull's behind it. Oh, shit. Who does he kill? I'm getting a few of the
people.
Does
he kill Modok or something?
I thought Murdoch was in
the some of the bits where it's sort of like a, you know, we're inside Deadpool's head and we're seeing what he's seeing and it's a different cartooning style was pretty good fun.
Yes, definitely. Like you said, the art's great in this.
I just don't need this. I don't need this in my life.
It is good just to kind of be reminded of all the characters in the Marvel Universe. I don't know. If you need a primer of who's who, they're all in this book and they're eventually going to be killed.
Yeah. Good.
But if your body craved yet another Deadpool killing all of the Marvel heroes book, here it is for you.
Nice.
Number one. Finally, if you thought we were like vague to insulting towards the Marvel books we've talked about so far, you didn't even read this one. You know better. I don't know why I keep giving these a shot.
It's an official policy in my life that I do not read any Marvel movie prequel books.
So it's an official policy in my life that I read every book that has number one on it. This week I read Thor Ragnarok Prelude number one by Corona Pilgrim with art by J.L. Giles and J. David Ramos. Will Corona Pilgrim is who did the thing. But anyway, it's a prelude to Thor Ragnarok. It's part one of four. What do you think this book, which, you know, occasionally these prelude books, they just kind of sum up other things that have happened in the Marvel movies that would be relevant to the movies. So it's a Thor prelude. What do you think this book is going to be about?
Well, judging by the cover, I think it's going to be about the Hulk.
So this is the first half of the Incredible Hulk movie. So that just
awesome.
that's all this
Which
is.
Which one's that one? Is that the
Edward Norton Hulk
Edward
movie.
Norton one, right?
Yeah.
The only thing I remember about that entire movie is the bit where he and Liv Tyler are making out and then he's like, no, we can't have sex because I'll Hulk out. It's the only bit I remember of the whole movie.
I didn't get far enough in the comic to see if that beautiful film scene was made it to comics.
That in it?
But I just don't understand why these exist.
No. It is literally just to try and
cash
take
in
people's money.
Yeah, I know. It should be like, you should open it up. It's like Thor Ragnarok Prelude. You open it up and it's a download code for the Hulk movie. Do that instead. It's way better. Anyway, I won't be reading two.
It's a good call.
Yeah, two, three or four of that. Although I might open up the cover and see which other movies they're going to summarize. Like, are we going to get like a summary of the rest of the Hulk movie and then both Thor movies? I don't understand.
Yeah, maybe. I don't actually remember really what happened in the second Thor movie. I know
Dark World.
Yeah, like I know Malekith really was in it.
Loki's good.
Yeah, Loki seems.
It's all about Loki. Everyone hates that movie, but I think Loki's performance is strong enough to kind of make it a movie that I really enjoyed.
You're a Hiddleston.
I'm a Hiddleboy. Hiddleston. Ooh, I like that. It's an Image right now, and they put out one number one, but oh boy, it was a big number one. It's a 64-page number one called Sacred Creatures, and it's been written by Pablo Raimondi and Klaus Janson with art by Pablo Raimondi.
It was by Chris Chukri.
Yeah, and Klaus Janson, I guess best known as an inker. Mm-hmm. Specifically, Sue. Is he Frank Miller's inker? Is he? No.
I don't know.
Is he just?
I don't know him.
And Jim will know, the always pantless Jim. Klaus Janson.
Jim, I said you were never wearing pants before when you were out of the room. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I mean, he was out of the room taking off his pants. what do we know Klaus Janson from? Oh, Dr. Yeah, sorry, Returns. Cool. All right, cool. I nailed it.
Yeah, good job.
I did good. Don't even need Jim. I just need Jim's pants. That's why he doesn't wear them, because I wear them. I wear two pairs of pants every time we record Serious Issues. 50 comics, two pairs of pants. That's 11's way. So Sacred Creatures is a big, long, convoluted story that jumps from time frame to time frame. At one point, the main character has a flashback to something that we haven't seen happen yet, which I thought was baffling. Mm. Like, he has a flashback to something that we see happen like
later?
Two more pages after that. I thought that was shitty writing. But I hate describing comics like this, because okay, what is it? We've got this guy who is his partner is pregnant.
Yep.
His partner's mother hates him because he's a bit of a no-lifer. But guess what? He's got a job interview at a museum. He can't believe he's got it. All he needs to do is just nail this interview and he's set.
Yeah.
But he has a bad day and his bike gets stolen. And then he gets touched by this old lady who like makes him sleep for like 5 days straight, and he misses his interview, and he's just terrible, and he's fucks
sketchy and all over the place, and
yeah, and then so this old lady is a part of like this kind of like shadowy supernatural crime family, and basically what Immortal. They're doing is they're like setting up this guy to have the worst week ever so that he can
kill someone for them.
Yeah.
And, and it looks like that person, spoilers guys, but on the last page, the person he killed was an angel. So it's got like religious overtones, and I think we're going to discover that all these characters are like Lucifer and Cain and Abel and blah, 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 blah.
Look, if you specifically wanted to read a comic this week that had an angel's pubes in it, Sacred Creatures, number one.
Who knew angels had pubes, guys? also, if you want to see a character that is like, there's some pretty explicit like photo referencing of actors in this, like that is definitely Tilda Swinton.
Yes, definitely.
And there's a couple of other ones that you're like, oh, I see who you're trying to do. And I almost thought for a second that the priest character, there's like this
was Hellblazer
cool priest. Yeah.
Yeah.
But he looks exactly like Hellblazer. Like he's got blonde hair and he's wearing a jacket thing.
Yep.
You guys know what I mean.
That's the two things. That's all you need to get Hellblazer.
Yeah, exactly.
Siobhan points out anyone wearing a jacket with blonde hair in the street. It's Hellblazer.
My version of Hellblazer is Keanu Reeves forever.
But this is a massive...
Just to make Wayne mad.
It's a... Yeah, God, people are upset. Wayne just quit King's Comics because of that comment. There's parts of this book that I liked, and then the parts that I really didn't like, I fucking really, really... I was just like, ugh. Like at one point, he gets tricked into having sex with an overweight woman. Oh,
no. That bit was dumb. Like, oh, you thought you were going to have sex with me? No, I'm going to make you have sex with this slightly chubby woman.
Yeah,
terrible.
And it definitely felt like this is a comic written by old men.
yes. That's true. But then I also, I quite enjoyed it. I quite enjoyed the story. And there were definitely bits, like, the, like, pregnant girlfriend who's like, I thought you were going to grow up thing is dumb and annoying, and I hated that.
Also, the main character, you don't really feel for him. You kind of want him to you want to see how much worse his life can get.
Yeah,
which totally. Maybe that's the point. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, but yeah.
But I am sort of intrigued, and I kind of want to know what the hell is going on with this weird family of.
Well, that generally happens when you read 64 pages of a story. Yeah, you want to know what happens next.
That's a good point.
Look, I think there were moments of this book that I didn't like, but I think there is enough intrigue and. Mm. That final splash page of the dead pubed angel is
compelling.
Yeah, pretty captivating. Mm. So I'm definitely going to give this series another chance.
Absolutely.
And this for $4.99, you get 64 pages of a massive new image series.
Also, there's a whole thing where the dude is being chased. The dude and the Hellblazer priest are being chased by two giant hairless cats. Those creepy, like, sphinx cats.
Yeah, yeah. That's awesome.
That was good.
There's some good moments in this book. But yeah, and they're clearly, it's one of those books that, like, I didn't know if it needed to be quite as long as it was, but I'm glad that they were able to show off so much of this world that they're creating mm-hmm. with this first issue.
Yep, good fun.
Yeah. So my favorite number one this week was put out through Lion Forge, who would probably be becoming one of my favorite publishers.
Yeah, man, Lion Forge had a great week.
So this is, like, Lion Forge, I guess, are better known for reprinting European stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if this is a European reprint.
Oh, and Voltron.
And Voltron.
Apparently.
Okay, they also put out Voltron. Thank you, Pantless Jim. I think this might be a brand new series that they're putting out, but I could be wrong. It's by two of our favorite writers and creators, Ulysses Farinas and Eric Freitas wrote this, and the art is by Daniel Irizarry. It's called Claudia and Rex. And this is an incredible book that combines like the death of gods with a young family who've recently lost their father, and so the mother and her two children are moving from one state to another.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of disconnect between them all, and they basically the dying gods leave their world and intercept this family. And a bunch of crazy shit happens, and it looks great, and the dialogue's really great. There's a lot of heart to this story. Mm-hmm. It's three issues. So mm-hmm. This is one of three, and they're just tell you off the bat, this is how many issues this is going to be, and I love it when publishers do that.
Absolutely. And there's so much fun. Like, they don't just do the same gods that we've seen portrayed a billion times in various comics. Like, these are gods that from, like, way more obscure cultures and things like that you're like, oh, I have no idea who that is. That's a really fun, like, that's a really fun addition to this. And I love so much that the younger daughter the older daughter gets all these god powers, and the younger one just gets put into the body of what she was thinking about at that time, which was a prehistoric rhinoceros.
Yeah.
Now the younger daughter is, like, this giant rhino, giant hairy rhino, and the older daughter has all these superpowers, and it's so fun. Such a good fun series.
So fun. Like, I really love Farinas and Freitas. I haven't really read anything by them that didn't connect with me in a way that most other comics don't. Like, they're so imaginative and
absolutely
really great at, you just have to get past, like, the first four pages. I had to reread the gods part a few times to get the full scope of what was happening. Mm-hmm. But I kind of like that as well, because, like, they really do hook you with so much heart in their stories alongside all the crazy things that they shove in their comics.
And the color palette is so fun. It's so pink.
Yeah, pinks, purples, oranges.
Mm-hmm.
It's really, really, really great, good book. So, yeah, this is one of my favorite books of the week, Claudia and Rex. Highly recommend everyone checking it down. And just in general, keep Lion Forge on your radar.
Yeah, there's some really cool looking stuff that they're doing at the moment.
Yeah, like the cast-offs. Apparently, this is already coming out. I haven't even seen that before.
Yeah,
it looks wonderful.
I'm getting that in.
And Mer, which is a new graphic novel about mermaids.
Something called Water Memory. Looks cool.
Lionforge. Look out for him, guys. This is good stuff.
Absolutely.
So, yeah, that was one of the better books for me this week. And a good one, a good all-ages comic too. We love recommending all-ages comics. And so the next few are all going to be all-ages comics that maybe we don't necessarily recommend. first of which is, this came out through Paper Cuts, an imprint that... I think they already do other...
They just do all-ages stuff.
All-ages stuff, sure. And this is Gumby number one, with a very ambitiously titled first all-new collector's item issue. So I saw this and was just like, okay, this is going to be another, like, shitty, weird television series comic from something that, like, I don't understand why the fuck Gumby needs a comic. Do you even remember Gumby?
No. I mean, like, I know the basic concept is he's, like, a green guy and Gumby. He's got a horse. But I don't think I've ever actually seen an episode of Gumby. So
he can walk into
no
any
idea.
Book with his pony pal and prickle and goo.
Ooh, that sounds dirty.
If you got a heart, then Gumby's a part of you. So Gumby was a claymation show.
I don't like the sound of that at all.
That I grew up with. I think it started in, like, the 50s, and in fact, this comic references the very first episode of Gumby. But Gumby is this purple clay dude.
He's green. I know about Gumby.
And I'm literally looking at him and saying he's purple. I don't know what's wrong with me this week. He's green. He's a green clay dude, and he has a red clay pony, and they can walk into books, and that's their way they travel into these different lands and have crazy adventures.
Can he also like change shape, or is he just okay? Right.
Yeah, yeah. We were clay. He's clay.
All right.
Clay.
Yeah, I sort of figured.
You know about clay people. Yeah. All clay people can do everything. And also, he has like his enemies are like these like wordless, like mute blockheads.
Cool.
They just kind of create mischief and weird situations for him to get into. It was a fun little show when I was a kid, and I was like, oh boy, this is not going to translate to comics very well. For the most part, it doesn't. But the reason I was suddenly like very intrigued is that the first creator listed on this is Kyle Baker.
Mm.
You also got Ray Fawkes on here as well, who we're a fan of. His comic, which he just writes, is just feels like any generic kind of all-ages story about Gumby and Pokey trying to get ice cream. And then there's another story about Gumby going to the moon. But the story in the middle is written and drawn by Kyle Baker, who you may know for his various creator-owned work that he put out through Vertigo or his incredible Plastic Man run.
Mm-hmm.
He's a really, really great creator. He has an extremely unique style. He even did some artwork on that great Beatles comic that the Dark Horse put out a few years ago.
Did you read that?
Oh, that was great. I'll lend it to you. It's really good. But he's an incredible creator, and I always like whenever my eyes light up whenever I see his name written somewhere. I even just like he's one of my favorite. It's a very weird thing to learn about me, but he's one of my favorite signatures.
He's got a great signature.
Looks like Walt Disney. That's why I like it so much.
Absolutely.
So he does this like this kind of Gumby story. It's like a 5-pager story, and he's really, really great, unique artwork, beautiful color palette, weird backgrounds, and it's a. Basically, this funny story about Pokey starts hanging out with a model, and then they decide to make her a dress for a show that she needs to go to. It ends up being a hat show, and there's a bunch of like adult jokes in it, and but not like gross out ones, just like you know older leaning ones. Whereas the other stories are way more kind of like dull, kind of classic, all ages kind of broad humor. I thought this was really really fun.
Mm.
I guess it all depends on your knowledge of Gumby.
Yeah, I couldn't really get through it because my knowledge of Gumby is limited.
Well, at least you know he's right. He's correct color.
Yes.
Because you use your eyes before talking about something. But I don't know. Like if you have any love for Gumby franchise, I don't know why you would really.
Mm.
Like to that beyond like, oh, that was a fun thing I used to watch. But I don't know.
If you really want to force your children into liking things that you liked when you were a child many, many years ago, this could be the comic for you.
Well, so funnily enough, my son Archie will always, if I leave comics lying around, he always goes through them now, and he grabbed this and he grabbed the next comic we're going to talk about, Casper. I read the stories to him with him on my lap, which is really,
cute.
Really fun.
Did he like
and,
them?
I mean, he likes the idea of comics because I point to each of the speech bubbles and the character, and I do weird voices for each of the characters sometimes. So Casper the Friendly Ghost came out through American Mythology. We reviewed their kind of Hanna-Barbera, Harvey comics thing that they put out recently. And this is just by the numbers, kind of all ages fair. If you like Casper or you did when you were a kid, and again, you want to make your kids read a really classic feeling boring kids comic, this reprints a bunch of classic stuff and then has a bunch of newer stuff in it too. I don't really have any criticisms about it. It's not awful. It's not that much more than boring, but it's fine. You know, it's fine.
If you want your kids to read something that was great when you were little, get the Little Lulu comics.
Are they
or,
good?
Yes. Or, who's the, what's that other, I'm not going to be able to think of it now. What's the little girl with the like, round head and the spiky hair, Jim?
Lisa Simpson.
No. She's got, it's really long-running strip series. It's really weird. We have so many on the shelf. Oh, I can't think of what she's called.
We'll remember. We'll tell you next week, folks.
We publish a Fantagraphics. I'll look it up.
We'll look it up. I would love someone listening right now to go back and take every weird question we asked Jim, who sits opposite from us at King's Comics, and just take out of context. It must be so strange.
Mm.
like imagine if Jim is our Siri.
Absolutely.
So one last all ages comic came out through IDW this week. Hanazuki.
You told me I didn't even have to read this.
I'm just talking about this. This is fucking bizarre.
Mm.
So it's written by. It's adapted, by David Mariotte with art by Nico Pina. And it is this big, bright and colourful book. I've never heard of this character before. And I read it and I was just like, what the fuck happened in this? She's like she gets assigned to be on this planet and she gets given like an ice cream and she has to plant the ice cream in the ground. But then these weird other colourful things who can't talk keep stealing the ice cream. And then she gets upset and tries to steal the ice cream back. And then... it just kind of ends with this bizarre kind of like weird. And it's very strange and weird. And so I was like, what is this? It must, like, is it a franchise of some kind? Mm. So this is a direct adaptation of a of an animated show.
Oh,
the
okay.
first episode of this animated show called Hanazuki, which was animated by an animation studio called Titmouse, who I really like. But it as a television show, it kind of works because it's so bright and colorful. And I'd imagine putting it on for like a five-year-old would be cool because it's so weird and odd. But as a comic, this was just like... And it was unreadable.
Mm. Nice.
So Hanazuki number one.
Also, the comic that I was thinking of is Nancy by Oni.
Oh, Bushnell. Nancy.
Yeah,
Nancy. Yeah, yeah. Go buy a Nancy comic instead of a Hanazuki.
Absolutely.
From All Ages Fair that IDW put out to one of the grossest and worst comics I've read since starting this podcast is the first issue of Diablo House, which is a new book by Ted Adams, who wrote and created this, with art by Santi Perez. And colors by Jay Photos. So Diablo House is, I guess, the beginnings of like a horror anthology kind of series.
Yeah, so it's trying to be like, I'm trying to think of what an equivalent would be, but that sort of horror genre of like, ooh, welcome to my crypt. Here's some creepy stories.
Yeah, and he references a lot of like old horror stuff that I was a fan of for sure, but this didn't feel anything like it.
Yeah.
This is like, so basically like Diablo House is this place in San Diego, or somewhere in California. Yeah, I think San Diego. It's like this big old Barcelona kind of...
Gaudi-esque.
Yeah, house. This surfer, this shirtless surfer dude is the kind of your host.
Mm.
And he kind of like takes people on tours through it. And then he starts telling a horror story of these guys that moved to San Diego and ripped off their friend who ran a taco truck. And... they make a deal with the devil and their lives turn to shit and the wife gets fucked to death.
Yeah, that was
which is a direct quote from the comic.
Absolutely,
which is horrendous. And the other guy drinks himself to death. And it was just like, what the fuck is the point of this comic?
Yeah, that was absolutely like there was very little good about this.
Another comic by old men for old men.
Absolutely.
About old men. So if you're an old man and you wish more comics were catered to your gross interests, this is for you. Diablo House, number one. Let's hear it for old men, everybody. Three cheers. Hip, hip. Valiant this week put out a number one by Elliot Rahal, Kari Evans, and Andrew Dollhouse called Bloodshot's Day Off. And these one-shots that they put out kind of sum up history of certain characters before launching into a new series. And I know Lemire is about to continue his big Bloodshot epic. So this kind of tells you some backstories of two of the other Bloodshot characters who have the same power set as Bloodshot.
Yeah, they're like, there are many Bloodshots. Now.
Yes.
And this is like the World War II Bloodshot and the Vietnam War Bloodshot.
Yeah. Did you like this?
I did. I thought it was like a sweet issue. It's yeah. like they have a day off. They're allowed to go like... kind of tie up loose ends a little bit. They give them one day in New York City and they go and sort of visit the graves of people who meant something to them. And, you know, the Vietnam one gets to go see his dad before his dad passes away.
And there's big, big flashbacks for both of them. I wasn't sure if I haven't read all of Lemire's Bloodshot stuff. I definitely intend to before the new series starts in September. But I wonder if we know their histories already or this is like telling their histories for the first time.
I don't know.
I wonder.
We've definitely seen them before, but I don't know if we've seen this much detail in terms of their family history.
There you go. Aftershock this week put out another Cullen Bunn comic, which means that's two number ones by Cullen Bunn that we've read this week so far. The dude puts out a lot of number ones.
Sure does.
This one is called Unholy Grail by Mirko Kolak. He did the art, sorry, Mirko Kolak on art. Maria Santolalla and Simon Boland. And this is a kind of like Knights of the Round Table, King Arthur story with demons in it. And so here's the thing about Cullen Bunn. He absolutely knows how to do exactly what you would expect from a concept.
Mm-hmm.
Problem for me is I'm never that excited about the concept to begin with, but I know if I was, I'd be like, oh, justice was done to this concept.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Right, okay.
So like with the Deadpool kills the Marvel Universe, it was everything that comic should be. It's just that concept is not one for us. Mm. Similarly, I don't care about demons plus King Arthur. Do you?
Yes.
Great.
I love Arthurian legend. I thought this was like a really fun take on that. Like it was doing something a little bit different. So in this, we see Sir Percival return decades too late with the Grail. And we, as it sort of flashes back in the comic, you realize that Merlin had been
killed by a demon, and the demon wears his skin, and that was cool.
That was cool. And so for years, Merlin has been driving Camelot into disrepair because he's an evil demon, and that's what demons do. I thought it was pretty good fun, and I liked the art.
Yeah.
And I thought that Cullen Bunn did a really good job of making the language sound appropriate without it being too, like, hither, thusly,
yeah,
blah, blah, blah.
I definitely agree. There was another comic that I read this week that did not do that at all. Yeah, yeah. I've got a whole bunch of number ones to burn through. But, yeah, I think, look, Cullen Bunn is an expert at genre. Mm-hmm. And nailing a very specific concept.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're on board with that concept to begin with, I feel like you'll always be satisfied. But if you're not, not for you.
Absolutely.
Next comic. Did you read Zodiac Star Force Cries of the Fire Prince?
I sure did.
By Kevin Panetta, Paulina Ganesho, and Sarah Stern. It's on out through Dark Horse. And I think it's the second series mm-hmm. in this series. Have you read the first series?
Yes.
Right, cool. Because I was extremely lost. I've not.
Right. That makes sense. So Zodiac Star Force are like Sailor Moon.
Right.
You know, like they're a kind of magical girl
team. Fighting evil by daylight?
Yes. Winning love by moonlight. Always ready for a good fight. I don't
actually
know
the
lyrics that well.
Zodiac Star Force.
But it's a cute series and I like it. My teen sister really loved it. And I enjoyed it quite a lot. I think they have a good range of sort of female characters in this book. And I thought that this was like continued on in a similar good vein. Don't pick this up if you haven't read the first series. Pick up the first series.
Wish
first.
I knew that earlier.
Yeah. It's mad confusing.
I like the color palette. Sarah Stern does great work. It's point out how much we like her colors. She does Ollie Vance's colors too.
It's very pretty. Yeah. It's a very cute, pretty book. Yeah. The cartooning is solid.
Excellent. So now we're going to do a burn through of number ones that I read some of.
Nice.
Dynamite put out 3 number ones this week. Justice Inc. The Avenger, Green Hornet and the Spirit, and Ash versus the Army of Darkness. So I was extremely excited for the Green Hornet and the Spirit, not because I have any strong connection to either of these characters, but the front cover is...
The cover's great.
It's a variant. It's by Javier Pulido. And I was like, oh my God, is it going to look like this inside? No. So the only reason that I really like the Spirit books is the kind of dynamic layouts and fun cartooning that I've come to expect from, like, you know, it was particularly Darwin Cook's run on the Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I was hoping, but inside it's quite, you know, it's entirely competent cartoon work, but it's not nothing grabs you at all. So I didn't really enjoy this too much. I didn't really give it the chance it deserves. So sorry, everybody. Justice Inc. The Avenger is, I guess, the franchise, another one that I've never heard of. So somebody is going to be upset that I've never heard of this thing.
Yeah, you know, I tried is? To. No,
what's the event? Is it just called the Avenger? I don't know.
I don't know. I don't know what the. I think the character is the Avenger, and then is the team Justice Inc. I don't know.
Right.
Thanks,
Jim.
yeah, I tried to read this, but I had no fucking idea what was going on, so I gave up.
And it was written by Kyle Higgins, who we love.
Kyle Higgins is great, but there's a lot of like characters being, you know, just if you know who this team is, I'm sure this was fine.
Yeah. So this guy, the Avenger, has like a. He's like black. He's like a white, very white albino kind of dude, and his face can be like smudged like silly putty.
Yeah.
So cool. I don't know. We didn't really see him use those powers to great effect. So I don't know. Didn't really grab me.
I would love it if he was like, oh, I'm going to change my appearance. And then he just like molds his face into like Gumby.
Ash versus the Army of Darkness. Yet another like semi-funny action book by Chad Bowers and Chris Sims. Look, it's not really what I want from this. He's like a school teacher now.
Okay.
If you love the character of Ash, I guess you'd enjoy this, but I kind of always enjoyed the world that the movies were set in and the fact that Ash was in it rather than that character doing whatever the fuck he did. Oni Press put out Rick and Morty Pocket Like You Stole It this week, which is a new number one that ties into the Pocket Morty's app. Like a phone game that came out ages ago.
Good Lord.
So I don't know. This is one of those books that, like, Rick and Morty is like, you know, very particular humor that works when you watch it. I don't know. People swear that the main comics are actually quite good, but all the jokes, all of Rick's dialogue, it just felt like fan fiction in this, and so did not read the entirety of it. I did read the entirety of Lady Mechanica, the Clockwork Assassin.
Nice.
This is by Joe Benitez.
I hate steampunk, so I didn't.
It's a steampunk, a sexy steampunk book, everybody. Created by Joe Benitez. Benitez with M.M. Chen on writing this, and pencils by Joe Benitez with Martin Montiel. I will say that his art style is quite similar to, what's his name, who did Snyder's Batman?
Capullo?
Yeah, Greg Capullo. Oh. There's quite a lot of similarities in his facial work.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for this dumb steampunk story about this sexy killer who is like part robot, I was actually found it kind of captivating. it was actually a pretty enjoyable issue. That was, you know,
yeah. Actually, it looks better than I gave it credit.
Yeah, the artwork's pretty great, and I mean, like it was only needlessly sexy for like two pages of this entire issue. So yeah, I don't know. I doubt I'll read another issue of it, but it was surprisingly enjoyable.
Nice.
Those are our number ones for the week, a nice big stack of first issues for you. And now we move on to a segment in which we roll a dice to decide whether we talk about DC Image or Marvel next. This segment is called Roll a Dice for Image, DC, or Marvel. Before we get to it, we are going to record another bonus episode this week, provided one of us doesn't have a fucking baby. we're putting it to a vote. So you can either head over to our Facebook page, which is facebook.com/groups/Serious Issues Podcast or patreon.com/Serious Issues Podcast to decide which, you know, character, team, creator, run, series you want us to do an entire special episode of later in the week.
So far there's been a couple of call-outs for Spider-Man.
Spider-Man, Grant Morrison and Alan Moore. Rob Liefeld, Runaways. There's some good ones, other good suggestions.
You know what no one ever talks about enough about Liefeld? Is everyone's always like, oh yeah, he can't draw feet. Oh yeah, his teeth are really weird. He draws the weirdest crotches of all time. Like, just go through and look all at every single...
Save it for the bonus episode, Siobhan.
It's worthwhile, guys.
If you want to help us decide what to talk about later in the week, head over to those Facebook and Patreon pages and cast your vote. Or maybe make a suggestion. By the time this goes up, I might give it another day before making it a poll.
Nice.
Cool. Let's go to this great segment. I'm going to roll this dice. And first, it's a two, so we're going to talk about... I didn't say what it was.
Yeah.
Fuck. Okay, number one to two is Image. Number three to four is Marvel. Number five to six is DC. And it is a one, so Image first. And then it is a six, so DC second.
Nice.
Great. Let's talk about Image first. The big issue this week, there was the extra sized finale to Jupiter's Legacy 2 by Mark Miller and Frank Quitely. Now, before we review this book, I just want to point out how different our attitudes towards Mark Miller have changed since we started this podcast, because I think we started this podcast as Starlight Finished, which was his great miniseries with Goran Parlov. And it was also as Huck started too, which was quite a promising book when it started too. And he was, you know, he'd done quite a few of these great little 5-issue runs for Image, and had just announced that he was going to do one with Capullo. Mm-hmm. Then since then, that Capullo book has come out, and what was it called again? Afterlife or something like that.
I can't even remember. Yeah,
I read the entirety. I can't even remember, tell you what it's called.
But yeah.
Rebirth?
Oh, yeah, Rebirth.
What's called Rebirth? Was it?
Reborn.
Reborn. That's all right. No. Thank you.
Old lady gets young and hot again.
That's right. I found that just awful, and like everything I disliked about Mark Millar's writing crammed into 6 issues. But Jupiter's Legacy 2, you know, suffered massive delays, but, you know, we read it for the Quietly art, and hopefully we get a good story from Miller alongside it. And so what did you think of this delayed finale?
I mean, like, I think part of my issue with the series is that I don't heaps remember what happened in the last issue, and I really need to, like, go back and read the whole Jupiter's whatever series from start to finish.
Yep.
To properly remember. But I still... Like, I love Frank Quitely. Like,
it's, yeah.
Even though this, as pointed out by King staff member Gareth, this does feel pretty rushed in places.
Well, there are some panels, like close-up panels of faces, where it just like it just feels like the initial pencils have been inked. And that
but I would still rather have a rushed Frank Quitely issue than most other things.
Well, I think he rushes one panel so he can do the most intricate tidal wave or cloud in the next. Yeah. That's the kind of stuff that I love from him anyway.
But I did enjoy that.
There are some excellent action moments in this. I love how like quick it is to jump to the conclusion of an action scene as well. And so you kind of are left to fill in the gaps as to how certain things happened or how certain characters died. There's some great, the opening scene in which two characters that have kind of mind control powers jump mm-hmm. from different scene to different scene as they take them to weird scenarios to, you know, escape from their mind. I really enjoyed that. It was a really fun way to kind of show off how fun Quietly's artwork can be.
Absolutely.
And there's some unbelievable superhero bullshit going on.
And a really good robot.
A great robot.
I would love for, like, Frank Quietly to do a mech series. It would take him 1 billion years.
Wii 3 is almost a mech series.
Yeah.
Like a mini
but
mech
series.
But I want
series. More of that.
Yeah, Wii 4.
Yes, please.
Yeah, I think this was like, I mean, it's not so much a conclusion as it is like the end of this arc, because immediately we get end of book 2, Jupiter's Requiem begins in 2019.
Yeah.
I hate that all Frank Quietly is working on right now is a Mark Miller book.
Yeah. I mean, maybe not. Maybe that's why it's taken so long. Maybe he's working on something else.
Yeah. I don't know. He takes his time.
He sure does.
And you can see what he's been up to.
Yeah.
It's still not quite at the level of like Jeff Darrow's intricate pencil work, but it's, you know, there is something very unique and special about Frank Quietly's stuff.
The way he uses a page and uses blank space, I think, is always really impressive. And his pacing is so good.
Yeah.
I love Frank Quietly.
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah, so yeah, look, I would still recommend, if you haven't read this series, definitely pick it up in trade just for Frank Quietly's artwork alone. And it is the story itself about these, you know, these children of the superheroes that are, you know, and everything went wrong, and it's up to this younger generation to try and right the wrongs of their parents' generation. Mm. It is a pretty good story.
Yeah, it is good.
It's not as heavy-handed as Mark Millar's other stuff that we don't like as much.
Agreed.
So that was the end of Jupiter's Legacy, but I was far more excited about the return of one of our favorite Image books, and that is Snot Girl by Leslie Hung and Brian Lee O'Malley.
I love this book so much.
This was a very special issue. I think I want to point out that when I first read Snot Girl, you know, my manga reading was limited, especially in my kind of slice of life manga. But since then, Siobhan's and many of you great listeners, shout out to Connor, have been on my back about reading more manga. Mm-hmm. And I was really, I mean, you know, it's very evident when you flick through Snot Girl that it's very influenced by manga. But there's so many manga tropes and storytelling techniques that he uses in this so well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So if you haven't read any Snot Girl, it's about a fashion blogger, Lottie, who also suffers from allergies. So when she wakes up, she always has big green boogers running down her face, which I can relate to because I have two children. And it's winter in Sydney at the moment.
And children are disgusting.
They are, especially when you take them to daycare and it's an entire room of kids with green noses.
So good.
But they're really fleshing out this world. And I think when this series started, it really challenged you to kind of relate to or appreciate the character of Snot Girl, because she is quite...
She's pretty unappealing in a lot of ways. And she continues to be, like, not very nice to most people and very, very self-involved and, you know,
but because
image-obsessed.
Because it constantly shows what's going on in her mind through that kind of manga trope of, like, having the subtext below all the speech bubbles of what she's thinking as she's saying things, you do end up feeling for her in a way. And I love that expanding the world. So we meet cute girl's sister who's like chosen, where cute girl chose a life of
being cute.
Yeah, that's right. And her sister has a family and they hate each other. Well, it's not cute girl hates her sister. We find out that cute girl's way older than everyone else. And it's really, really, it was such a fun return to this world.
Absolutely. And it's such a good book because there's this real undercurrent of like really unsettling stuff happening. Like we meet, like we check back in with Cool Girl and we meet Cool Girl's brother who's just a bit weird and a bit unsettling.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like the last issue was a huge cliffhanger, like a character was pushed off a building and we don't see anything to do with that until the last page. And it's a really heavy, you know, realization of like, oh, everyone's just like moved on with their lives while this character is in a coma and all this stuff. It's like, I love this book. I think it's so good.
It's really, really special. And another one that just
lends... It's so different.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a brilliant one to be collecting in single issues as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
The backup is this kind of like a comic in which Leslie Hung and Brian Lee O'Malley it's like a press conference with Anderson Cooper
on the Comics News Network.
That's right. Yeah. It's really, really funny. This is just a great book.
And it looks like they might. Yeah. It's like a really funny response. It's like, why the 6 month gap between issues? Nothing interesting was going on. She didn't do anything in those 6 months. Next question. And it looks like the comic might be going bi-monthly.
It is. They confirm it. That's,
I'm so fine with that. This is such a book that, like, you know, it's worth the wait.
Definitely. Good stuff. Highly recommended. Sun Bakery put out a new issue this week, the Corey Lewis anthology comic, in which he does like four short stories or so in each issue. We get the finale of the Dream Skills comic about the world without guns and everyone solves their problems with swords, which is quite fun. We get another issue of Layered Jacket, which is the extremely juvenile, you know, young dude who has a jacket that can... Like he can pull anything he wants out of it, and it'll also do anything it tells him to. And it's just like this dumb teen fantasy book. And then we get two very, very short backups at the end of the kind of Metroid planet searching kind of alien one. And then it's sort of dead naked Western. Yeah. And this is a lot less fun than the previous issues, but was still enjoyable. It's just, you know, focusing a bit more on the dramatic side of Corey Lewis's writing.
Absolutely. And it looks like the next issue we're getting a new
Shark Knife.
Yeah, we're getting a new Shark Knife story.
Have you read Shark Knife before?
I flicked through it. I haven't read it that thoroughly. So I need to There's a baby in the store.
There's a toddler in the store. Get it right.
Oh, sorry.
There's a baby in your tummy.
Yeah, so we're getting more Shark Knife in the next issue, which I'm excited about. And I still really like this.
Have you read Shark Knife before?
I've read bits and pieces, but I haven't sat down and like read the whole thing.
Is that the comic that put Corey Lewis on the map?
Yes.
Cool. All right, I'll have to try and check it down.
Yeah, it's worthwhile.
Do you want to take a break so you can hug a toddler?
No.
Oh, wow.
She seems busy hugging other people.
Rock Candy Mountain, issue number 4. Are you still reading this?
Yeah.
I kind of wish, you know what I kind of wish this was like strips.
Yeah, totally.
It really lends itself to being like a weekly strip in a newspaper or something like that. This is written and drawn by Carl Starks and colors by Chris Schweizer about hobos.
But I did quite enjoy this issue. Probably more than I've enjoyed previous issues.
Yeah, just it always takes me a while to warm up to the storytelling in this book. But yeah, it is fun. You know, like our main character's made a deal with the devil so that he can never lose a fight.
Yeah.
And so in this comic, we see him fight his way out of an entire, like basically fight every member of a jail.
Yeah, by making sure that he's staying in solitary confinement in like a tiny room at the end of a long corridor that no one can, like you can't stand 2x2.
Yeah. it was super fun. What about Extremity number 5?
I love this book. Yeah, I thought this was really such a solid one, issue. And like the art's so incredible and
written and drawn by Daniel Warren Johnson with colours by Mike Spicer.
And this was such a tough issue to read as we see like this character sort of realizing it sort of feels like she's realizing her dad isn't the man that she thought he was.
Yeah.
And sort of still having to live up to his expectations of her, while her brother sort of has run away to be more of a pacifist because he can't live that life, and like it's really heartbreaking.
Yeah, I mean, this book is just about raising a family in a war and what that does to the family and what that does to yourself.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Very, I thought this is a really good issue.
But I love it.
Yeah, and I don't know what the father's name is called. Like, you know, he's so cold blooded because of, you know, what's happened to him in this war and what he's had to do, and he just gets worse and worse. But you can tell he's not happy about it all. I loved the the second page, which is a big interior shot. What do you call it? Like a crop? Like basically they cut out.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The cutout.
Yeah.
You see like the tower that they all live in, and then you see a cross section of what goes on in each room of that. It's one of my favorite things to see. I know Brandon Graham does it really well in all of his comics, but this is brilliant.
It looks like he's drawn himself into it as well. There's a character sitting at a drawing board, like with obviously a comic page. It's pretty good fun.
Awesome stuff. So good. So this is really one of the other better issues this week. I think if you haven't picked up Extremity yet, this is a must get when it comes to trade.
Agreed.
Really one of the better Image books of the year for sure. So that's out through Skybound, which is Robert Kirkman's Image imprint, and he also releases his own books through there, which means Skybound also put out the 169th issue of The Walking Dead this week, which a lot of characters say goodbye. A lot of characters that we've kind of gotten used to seeing all together, including family members, are moving on to go either kind of go about their own lives or move to different areas of the settlements. We see Rick Grimes is at the lowest point in his life at the moment, and we see him potentially stoop to an angrier and lower place. This is one of those classic kind of like issues in which not much happens in between all the crazy, because you read Walking Dead to see people die, and no deaths happen in this book, and instead things that are going to pay off issues from now get set up. So it's still enjoyable.
Nice.
And there are so many goddamn characters in this book. It's a feat.
Impressive.
I also read what number is this one? 7th issue of 7 to Eternity, and I think this may be the last I read. It's not that it's a bad book. It just doesn't lend itself to month by month reading. I might just wait for trade on this one.
Yeah, I tried to push through because I think that it's so often. Who's the writer again?
Rick Remender.
Rick Remender. So often with his books, I'll jump off it and then it'll come back around and be amazing and I'll regret it forever. But I just can't. This one's a tough slog. And like the art on this, like Jeremiah Pena didn't do the art on this issue, and I just went like, I can't
believe. Oh, right. So James Harren, who I like from doing Rumble.
Right.
He does the artwork on this one. I thought the artwork was actually really good. And I was wondering why, because there's a monster that straight up looks like it was out of Rumble. showing up at the end.
Cool.
Yeah, look, I still definitely enjoy what's on the pages, but I just like the high fantasy, the amount of characters in this book, and they all, they're all various goblins and elves and stuff like that. It's so hard to remember which is which and what their convoluted backstory is.
Yeah.
I definitely might check back in on this once there's a second trade out. I also read the 25th issue of Stray Bullets, Sunshine and Roses by David Laffam, written and drawn by him. I made you read an issue last month. That was a really great one shot. This one is not a great one shot, but is a brilliant check back in with all the characters it's like a flashback issue in which we check in with all the characters before they all hated each other and wanted to kill each other. And it's sad and morose because even after working out the problems in this issue that how many years from now, like they're all going to be wanting to murder each other. But, it's a captivating, incredible read all the same. It's always my favorite book of the month. I just fucking love this series so much. Everyone should pick up that Uber Alles edition, which is now like really cheap now. I don't think maybe it didn't sell. I mean, omnibuses never do.
Yeah.
Definitely try and pick up that entire thing and catch up. So I know at least one, I would love at least one listener to be reading Stray Bullets alongside me. I just need someone to talk to about this brilliant series.
Yeah, I've got nothing to say.
Last Image book I read that Siobhan didn't was The Wicked and the Divine, issue number 29, which I want to give a special shout out to for being the first place ever to use the term Netflix and kill.
Oh, nice.
Which I thought was very funny.
It's great.
This is one of those books that's notoriously difficult to describe to new readers because we're quite... very, very much in the deep end, the deepest of the deep end for this book that combines kind of like gods and fantasy with pop stars.
Kieran Gillen ranting on again about how music is magic.
This is great though. This is one of those books that I contemplated dropping around the 10th issue or so, and then since then it's just like I was like, why did I think that? That's so good.
I should go back and I should read it.
Yeah, I mean, if only for, you know, Jamie McKelvey is a joy to watch. And the colors by Matt Wilson are so good too. This one's all about all the various gods that are left hunting down this one god who went crazy and killed a bunch of humans.
Nice.
Yeah, I'm really enjoying this arc. It's great. So those are our Image reviews. Now we move on to our Marvel reviews.
Wasn't it DC?
DC reviews, of course. That's what I meant. And we're going to kick things off by reviewing Batman number 26 by Tom King by Mikhail Janin. This is the War of Jokes and Riddles part 2, in which things take a very dark turn of events, and we see the extent of this actually becoming a full-on war in which Batman isn't fast enough to catch up with to make it to the bodies of the people before they die. He just all he finds is corpses. And you're starting to see the repercussions of these two characters, the Joker and the Riddler, going at each other.
I don't know how I feel about this weird, sexy version of the Riddler.
Is he sexy? Shirt.
Well, I feel like he's like, you know, he's got his hair slicked back and he's got like sweet muscles and his shirt's unbuttoned to his belly button.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
It's uncomfortable. Yeah, I guess you're right.
But I like everything else about Mikhail Janin's art.
Yeah.
I really like his Joker. I think this is like a scary, sinister Joker, but in a way that I like.
Yeah, totally. And I hope we see there's two double page spreads in which we see the bad guys that have sided with Riddler and the bad guys that have sided with Joker. Mm-hmm. And they're not what you expect. Like, I would have thought for sure Scarecrow would have sided with Joker. In fact, a lot of the monsters side with Riddler instead of Joker.
I sort of thought that all of like the characters who are more kind of have occasionally been on the good side sided with the Riddler, except for, I guess, Zazaz. And
well, then Deadshot sides with the Joker as well.
Also, Man-Bat. So, shut up. I don't know what I'm talking about.
but yeah, this is just a very fun... I mean, it's grisly.
Yeah.
You have to... I know a lot of people don't like a body count in a Batman book, but this is definitely the way that Tom King is showing just how ruthless these versions of the Riddler and Joker are. It's a war. It's a full-on war.
It's a war, guys. Yeah, and it's like it sounds weird to describe something that is that sort of taking itself that seriously is fun, but it is pretty good fun.
Totally, and it looks like if you thought this issue was way too serious, the next issue is called View from the Streets, Kite Man.
Nice,
and I love that this Kite Man, this stupid character that Tom King just features all the time in his Batman series. I love what I hope it's been building up to this, so we get to see more depth of him.
Yeah, I just think this version of
The Riddler.
Joker or
Riddler?
Joker is right. Really compelling. Like,
yeah,
just
definitely
the Joker
agree.
Who's like forgotten how to laugh, he keeps trying to find jokes that are funny.
Yeah, like at one point takes someone to 69 Dick Sprang Street.
Yeah. And the guy's like, huh, that's pretty funny. And he's like, yes, I suppose it is. And then there's a whole page of him trying to figure out his smile and how he should smile. And it's really good. I like it.
Yeah. Great cover too.
Great
the,
cover.
Yeah, we have the Joker's face, and the main piece missing in this puzzle is his mouth.
Hmm.
Superman this week was written and drawn by Fillions, and I saw that. It's written by Michael Moreci with art by Scott Godlewski. I don't know either of those creators.
Me neither.
From the top of my head. But I was like, oh, no. And then I ended up really liking this one shot.
Yeah, this was a really nice issue. I really liked it.
This is a one shot about Superman trying to raise his son John to be as good a Superman as he is, and not listening to the way that John wants to do things because he's too headstrong, and he goes in and he doesn't think about collateral damage and that kind of thing, and that really upsets Superman, and so it flashes back to when his father got him to basically not use his powers for the entire day and basically look after the farm the way that it should be done with the right equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And, he uses his powers when his father's not looking and ruins everything. And this is this great little kind of tale of parenthood.
Absolutely. Really, really sweet little, lesson about the sort of responsibility of being Superman and having powers and how... I like that the kind of end message wasn't like... So you do things my way, and that's correct. It was sort of like, I have to realize that you're a different person to who I am, and that we need to figure out how you do things, not just regurgitate how I do things. That was really nice.
I will say, though, that this version of John Kent felt way more like Damian Wayne than
totally.
John Kent.
This was a jerky little John.
Oh, well. I can stand to read a bit more jerky in my John.
Yeah, totally. He's been hanging out with some bad influences.
That's right. So speaking of bad influences, I once convinced you to drop Deathstroke. You can blame it on me.
Okay.
It definitely wasn't my fault. Yeah, I just thought that we were a fun segue. Deathstroke is one of the more celebrated books since DC Rebirth began, mm-hmm. written by Christopher Priest. I only lasted like 3 issues of it.
Mm.
And I want to not give myself too many excuses, but I think I dropped it because, it was at the time we were getting 5 new DC books a week, knowing that they were double shipping. And I forgot everything that happened in each issue of Deathstroke because it was a much more wordier,
mm-hmm.
world-building kind of comic than we were getting in the other books.
Yeah, I made it up until issue 9 and just every single... Oh, no, I made it up until really long time. I think I've only missed one or two issues.
Oh, that's crazy.
But I just spent the whole time being I don't know what's going on. I like this, but I don't understand it.
So the first and second trades have come out. The second trade just came out last week and I picked up the trades and I'm halfway through the second trade and it is such a good series.
Yeah.
So I thought I would pick up this issue 21 of the new arc, which is called The Dark Titans, the first issue of a bold new era. It is an incredible cover,
mm-hmm.
featuring Deathstroke and a bunch of teens,
mm-hmm.
In these incredible black and white, super like 90s image throwback kind of costumes.
And it's very it's harking back to that classic Justice League International.
Yes.
Cover. All I wanted was someone saying what? Or something like that, a speech bubble. Yeah, totally. That cover. But I guess maybe that would have been too referencey.
So they're called Defiance. He started a new group with Kid Flash. Is he called Kid Flash? Wally West, the younger Wally West.
I think
the new Power Girl. His daughter Rose. Mm-hmm. What's her name again?
I think she's Ravager.
Ravager.
Is she still Ravager? Yeah.
And then his son
Jericho.
Jericho. What's his superhero name?
Jericho.
Just Jericho. All right, cool, sure.
His son
Joey.
Is Joey.
That's right, sure. And then Joey. Who's the blonde hair one again?
Well, that's Terra.
Oh, so we do. So that's, yeah, right. Okay, cool. Great.
Who I haven't been introduced to in this, I don't know if she's already shown up in this universe yet, but Terra is the core of the original Judas Contract story arc in Teen Titans. And they really explicitly reference that in the last page of this. There is the panel where you find out in the original George Perez Marv Wolfman story that Terra is a double agent for Deathstroke blew my tiny child mind when I read it. And she's smoking and wearing all this makeup and in a sexy gown. And you're Terra, you bitch.
I can't believe you'd smoke.
Yeah, totally. You're a bad guy. No wonder you won't make out with Beast Boy.
And that's what she's doing on the final page of this book.
Making out with Beast Boy. No.
No. Smoking. this is a great series, and I love that first trade. It's absolutely a book that is way better to read in trade.
Yeah, I need to read it in trade.
It's such a good series. I'm going to try and read this week to week. Now I'm going to try and catch up all the mm-hmm. way. It's a great series, and if you ever think that we've dropped something that maybe we shouldn't have.
Mm-hmm.
Let us know and
we'll respectfully tell you to go fuck yourself.
That's right. Siobhan will tell you to go find yourself. I'll give it a chance. There are a few books that I know I need to go back and read all of Old Man Logan and a few other things that we've missed. But yeah, this is really, really, really great stuff, and you can see why it gets the accolades it gets.
Absolutely, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the story arc.
Yeah, definitely. Fun. I love this, this new reformed Deathstroke leading a team.
Totally. Good fun.
Really good fun stuff. Felt like classic, our favorite era of DC as well, mid 2000s era of DC.
Yep, absolutely.
Is it your favorite?
I think so. It's the one I have the most nostalgic attachment to. That kind of late 90s, early 2000s,
Infinite Crisis era.
Yeah, DC. Infinite Crisis. I have a lot of feelings about.
Yeah, Injustice 2 this week by Tom Taylor with art by Bruno Redondo. Introduced Ted Kord into this world. I've not read the first Injustice series, so maybe he was in that. And it was great to see Ted Kord and Skeets and Booster Gold and all that shit from that era of DC we're just talking about. That 52 era, mm-hmm. not New 52, very different.
Very different
52
thing,
era where we had Booster Gold and Skeets and the death of Ted Kord.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun kind of revisiting that world in this kind of alternate universe DC. It's a good issue. This is a really fun series. I think you would have all would actually really enjoy it.
Yeah, I know. I really should read it.
There's lots of characters that you really love that you don't see in regular DC books show up in this. It's good. It's really good fun. Haven't played the game yet either. Should. Speaking of games, how's your Crash Bandicoot going?
Oh, man, I'm so bad at it. I think that's everyone's realization of playing it. It's you don't remember how many times you played through each level as a kid, and now you're this was really hard.
Well, yeah, I had some thoughts on it Oh no! Actually, is Jim out of the room because Jim might kill
yeah.
me? Yeah, cool. Because Jim's like finished it, right?
I don't know, probably three.
I don't think I'd be very surprised if anyone who hadn't like grown up playing these games or have some memory of them would enjoy this game. Like, I don't think it's that well of a made game.
Yeah, it's more sort of just like irritating.
Yeah,
and you're like, oh, I remember how much I was irritated by this as a child, but it was all I had.
You're still playing the first one? Have you moved on to the second yet?
I skipped over the first one because it was too annoying. So I've been playing Crash 2.
I think Crash 2, like, I like that, like, the enemies actually look like enemies. Like, they're still turtles, but they have, like, blades on their back and stuff like that. Whereas, like, the first game, it's just, like, they're just animals who, like, walking back and forth.
Yeah, totally. And you're like, fuck you, out of my way.
Yeah. Anyway, Bane Conquest, number 3, by Chuck Dixon, with art by somebody, Nolan. Graham Nolan. This is this kind of fun Batman and Bane sticking together.
Weird throwback.
It's very strange, isn't it?
It is.
I'm just enjoying it. I just read it because I'm reading it.
Yeah, totally.
I don't love it. I don't hate it. I'm just reading it.
I did have a weird moment of like, and I might be being too like sensitive on this, but like the whole sort of like, oh, there's like an ugly little physically disabled dude and that's who the bad guy is. And like you can tell he's bad because he's ugly. Like,
yeah.
It's a little bit boring and played out.
Yeah, totally.
I sort of expected better of Chuck Dixon, you know?
Why?
I don't know. I like his stuff.
Okay, yeah, sure. The highlight of this issue is when Bane's about to fight someone, and the person he's about to fight, because Bane is from like South America,
mm-hmm.
yeah, and he says, "I'm gonna practice my Espanol on you, SA," and he goes, "Uno, dos, tres," and like punches Bane as he counts, and then Bane grabs him and goes, a lesson in Latin for you, perhaps. The trachea, and the like basically just reads out all of these, you know, Latin names for body parts as he breaks them.
Yeah,
that was great. my favorite DC book this week was Shade the Changing Girl, number 10. No fucking surprises there.
Yep.
But this is by Cecil Castellucci with Marley Zarconi, Andy Parks, and Kelly Fitzpatrick. This is basically Shade is in California, and she's kind of, wherever she goes, madness follows, and she just creates mm-hmm. all these real displays of madness. Meanwhile, where is her hometown? The East Coast somewhere.
Yeah.
Her friends are like following this kind of like reports of madness in the news and trying to pinpoint where she's going to be next. Mm-hmm. And then people from her home planet have tracked down that she's on Earth and are coming after her too. There's a lot going on in this issue, and it was really fun. And best of all, there's a board game in it. And you know what, Siobhan? I got a dice.
Oh my God.
So when this episode's over, we can play Try to Reach Honey. You'll need a six-sided dice, got it, and some tokens.
Nice.
I'm sure we can rustle up some tokens around here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I just love the series.
Yeah, it's just such a fun series, and Molly Zarconi's art just continues to be totally excellent.
It reminds me of Dan Klaus, like a kind of like more fun, simplified. Actually, in fact, he does versions
Adrian
of this.
Tamin
kind yeah, of totally. Yeah, yeah.
But that's better.
Beautiful. Yeah, definitely. It's really, really great.
Mm.
Best book. Such a good book.
Such a great book.
Those are our DC reviews. Now we can talk about Marvel.
Woo!
So we kick things off with a book that I was very worried to talk about with you because I loved this issue so much. This is issue 5 of All New Guardians of the Galaxy, written by Jerry Duggan, with fill-in art by Chris Sumney and colors by Matt Wilson. Chris Sumney, of course, best known for being the fucking best. Black Widow, Daredevil. I've been wondering what he's been working on since Black Widow finished up.
Mm.
And I know we're going to get an announcement of what him and Wade are working on very soon. Hopefully
Can't wait.
A legacy book. He did a fill-in issue of Guardians.
And I can see why you would be worried about me not liking this, because this is full of things that I do not especially like that are now sort of canon about Star-Lord and all that kind of junk.
Star-Lord and his love of Earth music. Yes. Basically, it's an entire issue about that, about him and his love of tapes and physical media mm-hmm. and having to pack up, you know, trying to fit all of his favorite songs into a box and mm-hmm. refusing to go digital.
Mm-hmm.
And the lengths that he goes to replace tapes when they die out.
Yeah.
He loves it every time he listens to tapes. They, you know, the quality decreases and then they end. But then he's got to, basically what he does is he like travels through space and he, by doing that, he can go back in time in a way and access airwaves that leave Earth. So tune into radio stations mm-hmm. from like the 60s and 70s to get all of his favorite songs back.
That was a really clever concept. And like you can, Chris Sabney could draw about just about anything. I would love it.
There's a brilliant double page spread, and this, in fact, won our panel of the week over at our Serious Issues Facebook group. You can come and join us and put your panel forward. But guess what, motherfuckers? I won this week. there's a brilliant double page spread of all these different tapes that are in Star-Lord's collection, and he's like kind of drawn pictures of different Marvel characters on them, and it was just kind of fun seeing what's in his library. He has like Skank, he has like a Scar tape, he has a Tom Waits tape, he has like Space Jams.
And I loved how the different tapes were sort of like different periods in his life, like the Slow Jams has a picture of him and Gamora on it.
Yes.
That was sweet.
He has just License to Ill, and it's just him and Nova.
Yeah.
Yeah, Richard Rider. Yeah, so good. I thought this was just a really, really beautiful issue. If you're not even reading this run, and you like Sumni, you like Star-Lord,
mm-hmm.
absolutely pick this up. It's, you know, it's just a one and done.
Absolutely.
It's great. It just looks fantastic.
Yeah.
And it is a really, really heartwarming story too.
Yep.
It's really, really, it's a lot of fun. And it's everything I like about Guardians, everything I like about Marvel Comics, filled in one
nice.
Fun little read.
Super enjoyable.
So glad you didn't hate this. I did not want to argue with this one about this one. Avengers continued this week, issue number 9. Mark Waid and Mike Del Mondo did a Secret Empire tie-in mm-hmm. in which they let you know where Thor's been. We know Thor has been warped away somewhere weird by Hydra Cap.
Mm-hmm.
It happened in the Free Comic Book Day issue. And this shows her kind of helping out someone on this weird planet somewhere.
Yep. I liked it.
It was fine.
I liked Mike. I love Mike Del Mondo, so I'm going to enjoy pretty much anything that he does. And I thought that the story was sweet, and I thought it was like a good vibe for Thor. For Thor. I thought it was good.
Yeah. I like that when she's been separated from her hammer, she's just so worried about reverting back to Jane Foster and dying because she has cancer. But because whatever weird dimension she's in, she can stay as Thor,
yeah.
which is helpful.
Useful
for her life,
absolutely.
And then I guess I'm not sure if we're gonna just continue catching up with Thor, but it looks like the next issue is gonna see like all of the members of the Avengers that have been corrupted and joined Cap's Hydra team,
also with
Doc Ock and a few other bad guys, Taskmaster and Black Ant, Deadpool.
Cool.
Yeah. Black Bolt number 3. Did you read it?
Yeah.
Saladin Ahmed and Christian Ward with this weird prison breakout. Intergalactic prison breakout series that started featuring Black Bolt, who is powerless for most of this issue, but eventually gets his power back and in doing so loses his ability to speak because when he speaks, he destroys things. I really, really love Crusher Creel, the absorbing man in this book. And I feel like this is definitely kind of like the moving things forward before we get a really remarkable issue next issue.
Yeah. I did enjoy this issue a lot. I think Christian Ward is doing some like amazing work. There's like this really cool, weird machine halfway through that's just so Kirby. It hurts and it's amazing and the colors are so great. Like, so Fraser Irving.
Definitely.
I love everything about it. I really love this series. I think it's really, really clever and really well realized.
This episode's called So Kirby It Hurts. Finally, we got one without a weird sexual innuendo reference. You're welcome, everybody. All New Wolverine, issue number 22 by Tom Taylor and Leonard Kirk, picks up after Laura has like fallen down after saving everybody in the last issue.
Mm-hmm.
And it's taken her 2 weeks to heal from the injuries that she sustained while trying to heal an entire island of people. To celebrate, she blasts into space. And it's like a team up between her and Guardians of the Galaxy. And they take on a bunch of, what are they called again?
Brood.
On an alien planet. I really like that this is like, it just kind of like effortlessly kind of shepherds in different Marvel characters from all over the universe to co-star in each issue.
Yeah.
So we get Guardians, we get Nick Fury, we get Carol, we get Deadpool. It's fun. Mm-hmm.
It is fun.
I think Gabby is such a sweet character as well.
Agreed. I don't heaps love the art, which kind of stops me from like being all the way in on this book, but it is good fun.
It's not bad art. I don't think it really suits the book.
Yeah, totally.
Although he does draw a great brood.
He does draw a good brood.
Nick Fury, issue number 4, James Robertson and ACO. This is the really fun high-tech espionage book with incredibly fun pop art colors.
Or the really difficult to read one, depending on...
It's not that difficult to read. Opinion, I think you're just like, no, comics must be read left to right. I will not allow my...
Says me. Like, you don't even like manga.
That still abides by your right to left rule, though. You're like, I refuse to go down and then up. And then. But this was a book, an issue in which Nick Fury has to go undercover and underwater.
Whoa.
And has to infiltrate Atlantis and go and basically pose. He has 55 minutes to pose as an Atlantean. So he has blue skin. And awesome. Instead of an eye patch, he has a seashell that covers his
bum. Well,
that's
so cool.
It is cool. it looks really fruity. It's fun. He basically has to find a Hydra spy that's been working, that's been undercover in Atlantis.
Does his eye patch just do it?
No, he doesn't. In fact, he almost dies in this issue.
Oh my God.
But he doesn't.
That's good.
Spoilers, the end. Jessica Jones, issue 10. Did you give up this? No, you didn't.
No, I still read it. I don't know why. I don't know what's going on.
Brian Bendis, Michael Gaydos, Matt Hollingsworth. This is the kind of picking up the old Alias book, but in a current Marvel Universe story in which Jessica Jones can say shit but not fuck.
Yeah.
Those are the only differences. This is like her and Maria Hill. Maria Hill has taken a hit out on Maria Hill.
Yeah, and she has like a million life model decoys. I don't understand what's going on in this, really.
Yeah.
Am I dumb? Yes.
And so Jessica Jones goes to Maria Hill's father to get to the bottom of what's going on. But meanwhile, another private investigator goes to Jessica Hill's mother.
Yeah.
It's still fun to read. I just don't really know what's going on.
And also, Maria Hill's dad is like a huge jerk and throws Jessica Jones through a window.
Yeah.
After trying to hit on her.
And here's some brilliant Bendis writing for you. After someone tells Jessica Jones to keep it down, an old lady tells her to keep it down, she yells? She says, the lady says, I'm going to laugh when they finally cart you and your creepy child out of this neighborhood once and for all. And so, brilliant Bendis writing. Jessica Jones responds with, lady, get out of my life or I'm going to eat that dog. And I might even kill it first. And when I finally shit its bones out, I'll use your other dog to wipe my ass.
Classic.
Great, great, great female dialogue.
Great stuff. I love it.
Talk about some other comics that I didn't read. Siobhan?
Yay. I read Hawkeye. Issue 8 by
I
want
to read
Thompson.
This because it had, I thought it had fish on this artwork. It must be the next issue.
No, but Leonardo Romero on art and Jordi Belair does the colors. So it is a very, very pretty to look at book. And this is sort of Kate confronting her dad and dealing with the fact that her dad seems to have given himself superpowers that have de-aged him about 20 years. So she's very stressed out and confused by her young evil dad. And then she goes to a fight club and it's good fun. I really like this book. I think it's continuing to get better and better. I think that Kelly Thompson has done a great job with like giving Kate a distinct voice that's similar, like if you know, it still feels like the Kate that we know, but it's kind of leveled up a bit. Sure. And I like the sort of how much of a main villain Madam Mask is. I think it's really good.
Madam Mask is definitely her villain as well. Yeah. I like that. Going back from the Fraction and Aja run.
Yeah, it works really well. And I think it's a really fun series.
Wasp.
I also, yeah.
This
I
is what Wasp. This is what
oh,
Fish
yeah,
did the artwork
on. Oh, yeah, this has
on.
Fish. So this is written by...
It's Veronica Fish, right? Yes. I always say Victoria Fish. Veronica Fish.
Jeremy Whitley and Veronica Fish with colors by Megan Wilson.
Yeah, I got to pick this one up because I love her artwork so much. How is it in this book?
It's really nice. This is a really sweet issue. It's very much like about... it's told through the perspective of Janet Van Dyne, the original Wasp.
Yep.
And how she's sort of developing this relationship with kind of her stepdaughter in a way. And how she was like, I never wanted kids. And now all of a sudden I have these like two young girls kind of...
Two?
Well, she's... after Ling, who is one of the other girls from the Red Room, who was Nadia's best friend, and they've saved her from... she had a bomb in her brain, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, they saved her. And this whole issue is sort of Nadia dealing with it and being very sort of stressed out by the whole situation, and Janet having to kind of bring her back down to earth while also fighting some of the some hilarious Marvel villains. She sort of kind of implies that she's going to take them under her wing and like become their guardian a little bit.
Right.
And I think it was really nicely done. It was a really sweet issue. I liked it a lot.
Awesome.
Mm.
One more. I don't know if I can read these weird Secret Empire tie-ins.
Yeah,
anymore.
It's not worth it, really. This is I read Brave New World, which is a kind of anthology-esque one. And so the first story was about Daily Bugle, and it's all about sort of the Bugle still trying to put out an issue while they're in that weird dark dimension thing. So
right.
It's got Kraven the Hunter and J. Jonah Jameson, but it's not that good. You know, like anything that has those two characters, I should love.
Yeah, totally.
But it was just like, it was fine, guys.
Angry Men, your favorite.
And then the second story is all about Starbrand, and I don't know anything about this version of Starbrand. I don't understand how, you know, I can be reading pretty much everything that Marvel puts out, but I have no idea who some of these characters are. So the new Quasar, I don't know who she is, and I don't know who this version of Starbrand is.
Well, you've read every single thing Quasar's been in.
That's so, I still not understand what she is?
But isn't this Starbrand, this is the one that Hickman introduced, right?
I don't know.
He's the young kid?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I mean, you've definitely read that.
Well, I don't remember it. It was too long ago. And then the last story is, again, the sort of Namor story, which, again, is it's just fine.
The Starbrand stuff was one of the very few weak moments of Hickman's Avengers stuff. And where there were some issues of his Avengers stuff, not the new Avengers stuff, that it just felt like, I was like, what are they doing?
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, it was the Starbrand stuff. And then I think, is it Starbrand and Nightmask or something like that? And they got their own spin-off series for which would have lasted like 4 issues.
I have no idea.
Classic Marvel. Have you got another little Secret Empire tie-in under there?
Yes, I also read X-Men Gold, which is the first of the Secret Empire tie-in by Mark Guggenheim with art by Ken Lashley.
So X-Men are in their own little country? Is this set in the X-Men country?
No, this is the X-Men who are in like the Central Park school dealing with now being in the Dark Dimension.
Oh, right. Okay, sure.
And Nightcrawler and Rachel, whatever her name is, make out.
Okay. Rachel Grey.
Yep. That's probably the most notable thing that happens. And then there's like a serial killer in the school killing people.
Which X-Men would you make out with if you were stuck in a dark dimension?
Blue Fairy Beast.
Yeah? Like when he was Cat Beast or when he was like that weird beast that he is now?
Nah, Cat Beast.
Cat Beast. Yeah, I'll do the same.
Nice.
I reckon that would be a fun dude to make out with.
Kelsey Grammer Beast.
Oh, I don't know about that. Star Wars issue number 33, Jason Aaron, Salvador Larocca, with Edgar Delgado on colors. So I said last issue, I was like, I'm going to give Star Wars one more issue. And if it doesn't win me back over, I'm just going to drop it.
Mm-hmm.
And let me say, it didn't start out very well with the extremely shitty photo-referencey Salvador Larocca art. I don't understand what they've done to make it so much worse since his Darth Vader stuff, but
really,
I really hate his faces. We get this like, you know, kind of cute kind of one shot featuring Leia and Luke stranded on a planet,
mm-hmm.
and uniting to help the locals defeat the Empire. Mm-hmm. It was fun. It was fine. Whatever. I was like, this isn't really enough to make me keep reading. Then on the final page, Lando motherfuckers. We're getting a Lando story next.
That is pretty fun.
That's all I need.
Yeah, that's all you need.
I love Lando, and now we're going to get a Lando book, and it's Lando and Sana teaming up together. I can't wait.
It is. I'm looking forward to that. It is weird how, like, LaRocca's art, some panels you're like, wow, that looks exactly like Mark Hamill, and then some it's like not at all. So I don't understand what photos he's referencing.
Yeah, it's very weird. Maybe he's just like, he accidentally looks up the wrong Mark.
Yeah.
And draws him. Those are our Marvel reviews, which leaves us with only the other publishers to get through. And we're going to kick off with a book that I was so excited to see. It's on the top of my pile this week. And
yep.
That is The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Issue number 7. I feel like we haven't had one in like a year.
It's been a long time.
It's written by Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa, who also does the Afterlife with Archie series. He's also the chief creative officer at Archie.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that means he overlooks both the comics and the TV stuff, right?
Yeah.
So he's a busy dude. Artwork is by Robert Hack. This is it's like basically like the straight up horror series featuring mm-hmm. Sabrina, the teenage witch. And this issue, basically it explains who a character that was, basically like a demon has taken over the dead body of a character from earlier in the series. And we find out the entire life and backstory of this demon.
Mm-hmm.
And I normally hate those books where it's like, those issues where it's like this, you know, let me tell you all about my life. First I did this and then I did this. But that's exactly what this book does. But it is like absolutely riveting
the
entire way through. This was the most captivated I was reading any comic this week.
It's such a good comic. And it's one of those books that you're like, oh, it takes so long to come out. And then every single issue, you're like, ah, worth it.
And
worth the wait.
And like you start going, oh, wow, this demon actually has quite close ties to Sabrina and her family.
Yeah.
And then when you realize how close.
Did you not know that that's who it was from the beginning? No.
No, I mean, I haven't. It's been so long between issues that did we know that already?
Yeah, we knew that it was.
Oh man, imagine how much more captivated I was forgetting that
yeah,
who he
totally.
Is and then learning that at the end.
So in the last issue
Don't spoil it.
Okay, fine. But it's such a creepy thing that has happened. Anyway.
It's brilliant.
It's so good, guys. Like genuinely scary horror comics with incredibly beautiful art. Like the colors are so nice. Set in like the Sabrina universe. But not as you know it. Like, there's so much that's really, really to love about this
series.
It's
insanely good. And, like, I just, the level of, like, watching this character as he was young make his way up through the dark mass and, mm-hmm. like, the church of Satan that he mm-hmm. was. And, like, you know, he's able to make his way up because he can conjure beasts.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the trickery, it's so fucking great.
Yeah.
This is far and away my favorite issue this week.
Yeah.
Far and away.
Far and away.
Not far behind it was Terry Moore's Motor Girl number 7. Two good 7 issues in a row.
Yeah.
Look, this is just getting more and more sad and tragic.
Yes.
This is the great series about a veteran who works in a scrapyard
mm-hmm.
and she can see an imaginary gorilla.
Mm-hmm.
And her imaginary gorilla gets her through a lot of problems that she associates with PTSD.
Mm-hmm.
There is a government agency that are trying to take over the scrapyard that she works at, and mm-hmm. there are aliens. I always forget that there's aliens in this book, and then they show up. I'm like, oh yeah, there's aliens in this book. But at its heart, it's a PTSD story, and mm-hmm. it's really really tragic. And the final 2 pages of this book really got me.
Really sad, yeah. Really sad.
I don't know how many issues this book is going to last for. I imagine around 12 or so, but. It's a beautiful
book.
Could
potentially go on forever,
yeah.
Knowing Terry Moore.
I love the moments of just absurd humor we get
because
of the alien stuff and like these two kind of like bumbling
goofy agents.
Yeah, it's such a good book. Terry Moore doing such good stuff.
Absolutely.
We said how great Lion Forge is. Mm-hmm. We've got 2 Lion Forge issues this week, except I'm behind on one of them, so I didn't get read the Aberrato.
Oh, okay.
Issue 3, did you?
Great, yeah, I did.
Can I talk about that one first?
Yeah. So the 3rd issue of Aberrato by Thierry Labrosse, which is the sort of, how would I explain it? Like sort of
like an immigration
dystopian future rebellion kind of book. And we're following this guy called Real, and it's set in sort of terrible future French Canada. And following kind of like some rebels have taken some hostages and Real's trying to get to the girl that he's kind of instantly fallen in love with because she has been taken as one of the hostages. And so we see her, what's going on with her. We see more about who the rebels are and what they're trying to fight for. The police officer that Real has like taken up with. And then there's also this girl who seems to be part of the rebels who has superpowers and it is cool as hell. And the art is beautiful, like really really French. The colors are really lovely. You find out a little bit more about this girl with the superpowers who's got a really tragic, really upsetting backstory. And I love this book. I think it's so so good. It's just gonna be 6 issues and it's super worth tracking down.
Awesome. I read Jez Maynard this week, which is mm-hmm. issue number 2 by Raoul and Roger, or Raleigh and Roger, maybe. I don't know. This is another great Lion Forge reprint of a mm-hmm. European comic about a
jazz musician / fighter guy.
Yeah, that's right. This is just a crazy story of as we kind of see all the moving parts in this crime caper, mm-hmm. all the different players and what they've been up to, and catching up with each other in the same room. At one mm-hmm. point in the book, we see Jez Maynard has been being chased by all these different criminal organizations, and he's stolen some jewels and he's trying to save his sister. And then mm-hmm. there's another character. It's crazy. It's a mess.
It's so good.
It's so good. The action scenes are brilliant. He will occasionally see these like golem kind of looking figures that no one else can see, or I don't know, they're just very stealthy.
Yeah, I don't know who they are, but I'm into it.
This is such a great book. Again, it's the best. It's the best paper. It's a beautiful, beautiful, beautifully printed cover.
Absolutely.
And cardboard. The colors are wonderful. The cartooning's excellent, and the story is captivating, cool, and very suspenseful in parts too.
You can imagine it having like a really sick jazz soundtrack.
Definitely.
Like it almost plays in your head while you're
reading it. Oh, this would be an incredible animated feature as well.
Yeah.
Like there's a moment where like the cops are racing to try and catch up, like, you know, get racing to the scene where Jazz Maynard is being taken hostage, and you see like there's, you know, there's five police crammed into one police car with other cops like running alongside the car with like, you know, the wail of sirens in the background. I think that would just look so great animated.
Absolutely. It kind of almost reminds me of Cowboy Bebop in the, like,
100%.
That's what you kind of imagine like the soundtrack being like, and how kind of how much action there is in the motion. And yeah,
Cowboy Bebop or what's the dude? The Triplets of Belleville dude?
Yeah.
That kind of shit.
Yeah.
Good shit. Jazz Maynard, great book. Real good stuff. I did not read this one. What is it?
I read The Unsound, issue 2 from Boom. This is yet another Cullen Bunn book with art by Jack T. Cole. I love Jack T. Cole. His art is very, very good. This is like scary, really super scary in a mental institution stuff, but pretty immediately becomes supernatural in tone, and I really like it. It's horrifying. There's a bit where razor blades start raining from the sky.
That's not good rain.
It's not good rain.
That's when you'd rather cats or dogs.
Yeah.
I read the what I thought was going to be the final issue of this. I was like, oh, finally it's done. Frank Cho's book, Skyborn, put out issue 4 of 5. His book with Marcio Menes, and this is like a book about like you know, immortal people. It's considerably less compelling than the Old Guard is.
Mm.
And it's also taken, you know, Old Guard was announced and has put out its first trades worth of issues in the time. And I'm pretty sure in between issues 2 and 4 of this book, Skyborn.
But Frank Cho has to draw some really detailed ladybutts.
There's only one ladybutt. He draws some mermaids.
He does love a good dragon, though.
Topless mermaids they get eaten or sexy. Shoot things with bazookas, and then the character that we thought was dead emerges naked from a
nice
isolation thing. I don't know. It's goofy, fun, whatever. If you like Frank Cho, you'll like this. I'm reading it just because it's dumb and it's fun.
Nice.
Those are our reviews of all the comics that came out last week. Thank you so much for listening. All that is left for us to do this episode is talk about what comics we recommend you pick up this week. There are a few pretty notable little things coming out. The thing I'm most excited about is a hardcover called Lead Poisoning, The Pencil Art of Jeff Darrow.
Cool.
I sing the praises of Jeff Darrow every time we read any Shaolin Cowboy, but he's done lots of great variants over the years and other work for Dark Horse and other publishers. Dark Horse are putting out a big hardcover collection of all of the, I think it's just the pencils. So normally we see, like, you know, the finished inks and colors, and being able to see the raw pencil stuff is fucking exciting.
Cause that's fun.
The level of detail he puts into his work is insane. We also get issue number 26 of Wonder Woman, which is the brand new creative team post-Rucker.
Cool.
Excited to see. I'm, you know, very hopeful, fingers crossed, that it's going to be even half as good as Rucker's stuff. We get the first issue of Spider-Man 2. Did you read Spider-Man? This is when it was the first ever meetup between Miles Morales and Peter Parker.
Yeah.
And it made sense then because they were both in different worlds. Now they're in the same world. What's the point of this series existing? I don't know.
Who knows?
But I'm kind of in a weirdly pro-Bendis mood at the moment, and I'm going to give it a shot.
I'll read it.
There's a new Gru book. G-R-O.
Oh, great. Excellent. I thought you were about to say Groot, and I was like, he already has one series right now.
I am Gru. Gru is the, is the Aragones. The guy who just loves fighting so much. Like,
kind
it's like
Conan spoof.
Yeah, bumbling idiot fighter, dude. Real fun.
What?
Cheesed it.
Mm-hmm. What's cheesed it?
He loves cheese dip.
Oh, loves cheese dip. Gru loves cheese dip, everybody.
God.
Put your pants back on, Jim.
Yeah.
Dark Days, the big DC event, continues with The Casting, number one.
Great, excellent.
Which will be fun. I wonder which of our favorite old DC characters are going to show up in this one. I'm just hoping for more Plastic Man.
Yeah, more Plastic Man.
Have a great
Martian Manhunter.
Ambush bug, okay.
Martian Manhunter.
Put your ambush bug back in your pants. Animosity returns with issue 8 and issue 2 of Animosity The Rise.
Oh, I'm not going to read either of those.
I liked The Rise, so I'm going to give it another chance. And then a book that I love, Kaiju Max, returns for the first issue of season 3
Woo.
By Xander Cannon. It's a great book if you like kaiju monsters. This is a book about them all being in a prison with weird kind of like real world kind of prejudice mirroring in it too. It's really good. And it's beautifully cartoon. It's awesome stuff.
Has a lot of feelings in it.
Yeah. You can find us online and talk about all the comics that we talked about this week and all the comics we can talk about next week by finding us at facebook.com/serious issues podcast or facebook.com/groups/serious issues podcast. It's where you can chat with us all day about comics and a thousand of other comic readers. It'll be thousands soon.
Obviously.
By the end of the year, I reckon.
Yeah.
We can find us on Twitter at @serious_issues or individually at SiobhanCBG and at LevDog. She's LevDog, I'm SiobhanCBG.
Yep.
It's a weird trade. We are also on email, seriousissues@kingscomics.com. Of course, mm-hmm. if you want to support the show, we would love that. You can either throw a couple of bucks our way and get a bunch of new and fun and constantly updated exclusive content. Constantly, I mean like monthly updated content. We're working on some stuff. We're going to be doing a bonus episode this week, mm-hmm. as we said earlier in the issue. Patreon.com/seriousissuespodcast is where you can find us on Patreon. Or you can just maybe leave us a nice review on iTunes. That'd be cool too.
That'd be nice.
No one's left a review for us in like a year.
Yeah, geez,
which is
guys.
Cool because that means no bad ones either, but also no good ones.
Mm.
Leave a good one. Thank you so much for listening, and all the best to Siobhan in this next week.
Yeah.
For unrelated reasons to comics. No, it's like, you know, just good luck reading comics this week, Siobhan.
It's always tough to get through. I have a lot of things that I've put aside specific for this event. I've got the recent Barbarella translation that Kelly Sue DeConnick did that has been sitting on my shelf, and I'm like, yeah, I'm going to read that while I'm in labor.
Oh my God. That would be so funny. If you do try and read comics, just get your phone out and record a bonus Serious Issues Labor Edition. Even if it's 30 seconds long of you just swearing while trying to review a comic. I would love that.
That'd be
so
great.
Much. Actually, I need to get you. I have a birth present for you.
Oh, thank you.
I bought you the Punisher issue.
Oh yeah.
In which it's Punisher with his guns at the delivery suite of a children's hospital.
That's amazing.
And then there's also like a kid with a gun. It's great stuff.
So good. I'm
hopefully
so
mirroring what will happen. So thank you so much for listening.
Thanks, guys.
See you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, this is Levins. Thanks so much for listening to Serious Issues. If you're not completely sick of my voice by now, why don't you check out one of my other podcasts? One is called Hey Fam, and it's about comedy and pop culture, so like comic book movies and comic book TV shows, all that kind of thing. The other one is called The Mitchin, and it's all about the food and bar scene in Sydney. You can find both of them on iTunes or download them directly at yolevins.com/podcasts. Thanks so much for your support, and I'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
This podcast is part of the Planet Broadcasting Network.
Visit planetbcasting.com for more podcasts from our great mates. I mean, if you want. It's up to you.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.